Here's the editor of Lenswork Publishing, Brooks Jensen.
I remember a fascinating conversation I had with my dad back in the 1980s. I was watching a movie which he knew I had already seen. But I had enjoyed the movie enough, I think it was Blade Runner actually, that I rented it again and was watching it a second time. Or maybe it was the third time. I loved that movie. And anyway, my dad said, "Why are you watching this movie again? You know how it's going to turn out." And I was a little nonplussed by his reaction, because to him, the plot was everything there was to see. And I tried to explain to him that the reason I watch movies over and over again is because there are subtleties that I probably miss the first time around, that I catch the second time around because I'm looking more carefully. I'm looking at different parts of the screen. I'm trying to interpret the things that I missed the first go around. And so there's value in going back and rereading a novel that you've already read, or watching a movie, or listening to music over and over again. It's the subtleties that we're trying to capture, not the overall plot of the movie or the book. Yes, we already know how it's going to turn out, but it's those subtleties that drive us to look again and again and again. And of course, this applies to photography too. There are certain books that I return to time and time and time again. I know the images I'm going to find there, or at least some of them. I know that I've enjoyed it on first pass. But when I go back, I'm looking for subtleties. And it's the subtleties that often make the work even more powerful, which I think is an important lesson for us producers and creators too. And just to illustrate the point, here are some photography books that I find myself going back to time and time again, because every time I do, I see more subtleties that I missed the first time, or the second time, or the third time around. And these are books that are about something, not, well, with one exception, not a retrospective of the photographer's greatest work. So here's my list of books I return to time and again that I would unhesitatingly recommend, with only the tiniest caveat, and that is Beauty's in the Eye of the Beholder. You may not like these books. You may prefer other books. You may not see anything in this work that's worth looking at. But in my mind, they're the seminal books of my photographic literacy and life. And so I love sharing these, because who knows, you might find one that really does excite you visually and creatively. The first of which is The Wise Silence by Paul Caponigro. It's a beautiful book. It's unfortunately a little hard to get a hold of. If you have one, good for you, pull it off the shelf. If you don't have it, maybe one of your friends or photo buddies has a copy, or maybe you're interested in finding one in the used market. It can be a collectible. But the reason I love The Wise Silence is not only because of the imagery, which is beautiful, but the printing, which is just exquisite. It's done on a matte paper with, I believe, maybe dry trap printing. It's absolutely gorgeous. Wise Silence by Paul Caponigro. The next is Tira Moran, and this is one of two by Paul Strand. Tira Moran I love because it's the quintessential book on how to photograph an exotic place. It's a mixture of buildings and interiors and people, people at work, people at play, people in restaurants. It's a fantastic overall view. So many times I see projects where the photographer just does the buildings or just does one aspect of a foreign culture. Paul Strand knew that that was a limitation he wanted to overcome, and Tira Moran is a great example of that. Also by Paul Strand, add Time in New England to my list, because Time in New England was the first book that really broke through the idea of image and text combinations being bigger than either of them separately. Time in New England is sprinkled with all kinds of text and Paul Strand's great photographs. And it's a beautiful book that, again, explores an exotic location, New England, I guess, in a way that's much more complete than you could ever do with just photographs or just text. The fourth book on my list is The Essential Dwayne Michaels. This is the only one that might be considered a retrospective of a photographer, that is to say, a gathering together of their best work. But it's worth it. If you don't know the work of Dwayne Michaels, here's a great way to get introduced to it. And again, a photographer who understands that image and text can create something that's incredibly powerful. In his case, it's very personal, it's not historic, it's very psychological, and I find that fascinating about Dwayne Michaels' approach to photography. My fifth book is one I'll bet most of you have never heard of before, but I keep going back and back and back to it. It's called The Living Room, and the photographer is Nick Woplington. Each image in this book is an example of sort of controlled chaos. You think you're looking at a moment in time, but what you're really looking at with each and every picture is about 10 different moments of time in someone's living room where the kids are doing one thing and the parents are doing something else and the grandparents are doing something else. It's a total disconnect, even though they're sharing the same space. It's a fascinating book. It's certainly not a very well-known book, but if you can find a copy of The Living Room, I bet you'll find it as fascinating as I did once I got past the fact that what I was seeing was not a moment, but a whole bunch of moments happening simultaneously. My sixth book is Rural Japan, Radiance of the Ordinary by Linda Butler. Her knowledge of the Japanese culture and Japanese language opened doors for her in a way that the rest of us tourists simply can't. And she really taught me the idea of immersion. I'll talk more about that when we get to Josef Kadelka. But Rural Japan, Radiance of the Ordinary is a spectacular book at a look back in time to a culture that's absolutely fascinating. The seventh book I go back to time and again is another Linda Butler book called Italy in the Shadow of Time. These are simply exquisite photographs. She is as good a large format photographer as has ever been. And each individual image, the composition, the tonalities, the subtleties in it are just amazing. I go back to it time and time again because even though I know these images in my mind's eye, every time I look at them, I see something new that I didn't see in previous visits. That's a fascinating characteristic about Linda Butler's photography, and it really is one that I can say applies to all of her books. Next is Landscapes of the Mind by Carl Chiarenza. This is the book that I go back to time and again when I'm frustrated that I can't go out somewhere, traveling somewhere, and do photography, because this is a book that was done entirely in, essentially, his basement. They're all objects that he constructed for the purpose of being photographed, and he constructed them out of scraps. He would often go through his own garbage can in the darkroom and pull out bits and pieces and torn pieces of paper and etc., and make these absolutely wonderful landscapes of the mind. And like all abstracts, every time you look at one of his images, your appreciation of it is being influenced as much by your state of mind as it is by what he's captured. Number 9 on my list is The Sweet Flypaper of Life by Roy De Carava. I think one of the reasons that I love De Carava's work, particularly in this book, is his absolutely masterful control of deep, dark shadows. We all know, of course, that photography is light writing, but De Carava explores the other side of that tonal spectrum. Not every image, but in a huge number of his images, you have to look into the shadows to really see what the picture is about. And at first glance, we don't realize that. But the more you look, the more you realize it's what's going on in the background, in the shadows, that really drives this project forward. Like Linda Butler's Rural Japan, Radiance of the Ordinary, The Sweet Flypaper of Life is a look at a culture that is absolutely fascinating, photographed from someone who is a part of that culture and has access to it in ways that you and I may not. Number 10 is Keith Carter's book, From Uncertain to Blue. It's the concept of this book that is so fascinating to me. I had no idea what this book was about when I bought it. I just flipped through and loved the photographs. And until you read the introduction, you don't realize It's a self-imposed project. Keith Carter is a Texas-based photographer, and he decided to go from small town to small town, photographing one image in each town that was characteristic of that town. What a fascinating challenge to begin with. And the first town he photographed was the town of Uncertain, Texas, and the last one that ended the project was Blue, Texas, hence the title, From Uncertain to Blue. It's the challenge of what he's given himself that to me is so fascinating. One picture for a small town. How do you do that? Well, the first thing you have to do is be there enough to know a little bit about the town, which he evidently was, and then to figure out how to distill that into a single photograph. Because this is a project with photographs from a number of small towns in Texas, there are some similarities, but there's also some fascinating differences. And that's one of the things I really enjoy when I go back to look at this book time and time again, is to see the relationships between one town and another, one image and another. And sometimes those connections are on subsequent pages in the book. Sometimes it's 10 or 20 or 30 pages down the way you realize there's a connection. This is a book you can spend a lot of time with because the images and the connections are so fascinating. Number 11 on my list is On Reading by André Courtège. This is a fascinating publishing project. Courtège wanted to do something that would be photographically at a high quality standard, but very affordable. Not a coffee table book, but instead an everyday sort of pocket book. And that's what On Reading is. It was published, as I recall, I hope I'm not wrong on this, it was published in either the late 60s or early 70s, and it was $2.95, which made it an incredibly affordable fine art photography book. It's not the best printing you'll ever see, but the fact that he was able to zero in on a subject that was readily available to him, that is to say, people reading in public, sitting on a park bench reading a newspaper, or someone on a rooftop garden who was reading a novel. From a subject point of view, it's nothing more substantial than pictures of people reading, and you would think that that might be sort of uninteresting. But it isn't. It's absolutely fascinating that he was able to turn that into a wonderful book of photographs. And again, one that I go back to time and again because every time I look at these images, I see something new. Or I'll see an image that I don't even remember was in the book, but there it is. We connect strongly with some images. There's a few images I really have to search to find the person who's reading. There's a little Where's Waldo in this book. But they're there, and you just have to search for them. And when you find them, there's a sense of satisfaction that, oh yeah, this one does fit in the book. Number 12 is The Home Place by Wright Morris. Wright Morris was best known as a novelist, but he was also a very accomplished photographer who photographed his aunt and uncle's farm, I think it was in Kansas or Nebraska somewhere, in the 40s, maybe it was the early 50s, and he created three books out of that body of work, all fictionalized, all stories of growing up on farms and people who lived and worked in the central states of America. The reason I keep going back and back to The Home Place is because the photographs are fantastic and wonderful, but the way the photographs intertwine with the text is also simply amazing. This book requires someone who's not just an accomplished photographer, but who also was an accomplished novelist, and Wright Morris obviously was. And because of that combination of talents he brings to this project, it's just mesmerizing. Next is Chavez Ravine, 1949, by Don Normark. Chavez Ravine is probably best known these days as the home of Los Angeles Dodgers baseball. That's where the stadium is. But in 1949, it was not a stadium. It was the home of a sizable Latino and black community who were entirely displaced once the city decided they wanted their baseball facility there. Partly by luck and partly by intention, Don Normark went into Chavez Ravine to document it in 1949 before the entire area was condemned and destroyed and all of those people displaced. It's a beautiful look at a community that becomes even more poignant when you realize that in a very short period of time after he finished this photography, the place no longer existed. It's a message about the power of photography, but also about the power of politics to build and destroy. The title of this book, Chavez Ravine, 1949, encourages you to think that it's a photographs of a place, but it's not. It's photographs of a people. And that's part of the reason I keep going back to it over and over again. Number 14 is Mirrors, Messages, Manifestations by Minor White. He is affectionately known in some photographic circles as the Zen guru of fine art photography. He certainly had a mystical side to him, there's no doubt about that, and that's one of the things that keeps drawing me back to this book, is every single one of his compositions is a metaphor for something. And what it's a metaphor for changes depending on the mood I'm in when I'm looking at the book and how I've come to interpret his images over time. He has a number of other books, but I think Mirrors, Messages, Manifestations is the best of the lot. The next is not really a book. It's a series of four books that was published by the Museum of Modern Art called The Work of Aceh. This four-volume set is about as definitive a work on Aceh as you could possibly get. And it's not only a fascinating look back at a culture that has, to a large degree, been replaced by modernism, it's also a fascinating look at the perseverance of a photographer to pursue a project so single-mindedly for so many years. If you're a Francophile at all, this is an irresistible book. If you're a photographer, I find it also an irresistible work. Because it's primarily pictures of streets and corners and buildings and whatnot, it can seem to be a little repetitive. But if I set it back on the shelf and come back to it 6 months or a year later, I'm fascinated as I was the first time I picked up the series of books. So four volumes in this collection, and they're all fantastic. The next is a book titled Sudek, which obviously contains the work of Josef Sudek. There are two Sudek books that if you can't find one, you might be able to find the other. The first is called Josef Sudek, The Window in My Studio by Josef Sudek and Anna Farova. It's a relatively recent publication. It's just terrific. But the one I actually prefer is a little newer than that, called Josef Sudek, The Legacy of a Deeper Vision by Maya Marie Sutnik. And like Carl Chiarenza, Sudek photographed in and around his home, in and around his town, and is a very sensitive portrait of his place and his time. And that's what fascinates me about Sudek. The idea of making great photographs here where I'm sitting in my studio escapes me. I don't have that vision, but I should. And every time I want to cultivate that way of thinking, that sensitivity, I turn to Sudek because he was the master of it. Any of the Sudek books, and there are a number of them, would be a great introduction to his work and his life as a photographer. And the last one I want to mention is Gypsies by Josef Kadelka. The photographs in Gypsies are fantastic. His involvement in the community is what makes it doubly interesting. He wasn't a photographer who went there from the outside looking in. He became part of the community and as such was given access to photograph things that are simply not available anywhere else. Kadelka is one of my favorite photographers, and of all of his work, perhaps Gypsies is not only the one he's most well known for, but the one that is my personal favorite. So, there you have it. 17 books I go back to time and time and time again. If I were on a desert island, these are the 17 books I'd want to take with me. Well, I'd probably want to take one called How to Survive the Ocean in a Handmade Raft, but that's another story. These 17 are the books that I go back to time and again for what I continually find on further examination that I may very well have missed in previous examinations. These are all great books. You can't go wrong with any of them.
Copyright 2025, Lenswork Publishing.